pictures and other, this is a glamorous life, there's so much prestige, so much money. And when we get into it, we see around us everybody is so much competitive, everybody is trying to work so hard to become more famous, to get more prestige, to get more good marks and to study further and further. And when we hear about spiritual life, we like it, but we don't want to take it so seriously. And we hear that life is full of miseries, but at that, when we enter the medical field around 18 years, nobody has actually suffered anything positively. We hear about others suffering, but because actually we have not suffered, we don't realize that what is actually suffering. And everybody around is just trying to earn more and more and trying to work harder and harder. When we hear about spiritual life at that stage, we like it but we don't want to take it seriously. But we know that actually that is the truest goal of life. So how can we become sincere and avoid not listening to others? And that is the spiritual life.
Medical profession is glamorous, you said?
It's glamorous?
I never heard of such a crazy thing.
Glamorous.
I guess if you say.
Made of brass, every human being in every planet, in every universe, in all of existence. That is knowledge. How many of us have that type of knowledge? Therefore, we are not Bhagavan. Bhagavan is one who has all wealth. Krishna explains in Gita, Bhoktaram Jagat Sapasam Sarvalek Lokamaheshwaram, that all facilities of all planets, in all universes, in all of creation is my property. He is the creator of everything, the maintainer of everything, and the destroyer of everything. We may claim proprietorship, but it's not taken very seriously by the Lord. Because in his form of time, Krishna says in Gita, time I am, in his insignificant manifestation as time within this world, he takes everything back from us. I am thinking, this is my body, this is my family, this is my property, this is my nation. And at a certain point, either in this life or at the end of this life, through time, Krishna says, it's not yours, it's mine. It's always been mine. If it's yours, stop me from taking it away. Very well. If you can stop Krishna from taking it away, then we will all accept with our heads at your feet, that it is yours. But if you cannot stop him from taking it away, you must accept that it is his. It's always been his. So therefore, one who possesses all wealth, that is Krishna, Bhagavan. One who has all beauty. We may be a little beautiful. We may attract some people. Sometimes, in some places, but we can't attract everybody. Even the most beautiful woman in the entire human species looks like an ugly, terrible monster to an ant. Is it not true? And a female ant looks like the most beautiful creature on four legs to an ant. But I don't think any of us are having difficulty controlling our minds when we see that beautiful female ant. So beauty is relative to our particular perception of who we are. One man's food is another man's poison. But Krishna explains in Gita, all things that are beautiful in all of creation is just one little tiny spark of my splendor. What is it that attracts the male ant to the female ant? And what attracts us to a beautiful man or a beautiful woman? It is because the spark of Krishna is within them. Wherever there's the life, there's the spark of Krishna. And that's the source of all beauty. What is the beauty of the source of all beauty?
They exhaust it all, trying to find that mirage, that water. And then when they drink from that illusory appearance of water, what do they get? They get hot sand in their mouth. They think it's water. And that only increases their thirst. And then they realize, this didn't work. And then they see another mirage. And then they go chasing after that. And then it disappears. And then they see another one, and they chase after that. And they see another one. Maya will never, ever, ever stop showing mirages to the conditioned soul. They are unlimited. Some people, they preach the philosophy, let us just enjoy to our heart's content the satisfaction of the fruits, of the gifts of this beautiful world. And ultimately we'll get old and we'll get tired of it, and then we'll seek self-realization. But that doesn't happen like that. Because however old we may be, Srila Prabhupada was amazed when he was in France and he heard about 90-year-old men going to the discotheques and the nightclubs looking for young ladies to have pleasure with. Prabhupada said, what kind of pleasure could they have at 90 years old? But still, that physically they have no power to even enjoy. But that desire within their heart is just as strong as if they were 16. The only difference is they have a useless body that just can't act like a 16-year-old person. But the desire is still there. The desire does not go away. At the time of death, it still will not go away. And you cannot burn it out by overdose of material enjoyment. The only way to get rid of this burning fire of thirst for material existence is to stop chasing the unlimited mirages that Maya presents before you. All the different promises and prospects for pleasure and enjoyment that are everywhere, we have to realize it is not real. It has nothing to do with my soul. It will only aggravate my condition, diseased condition, and it will only waste my time. Yova etharakshadam gargi avarit lashma praiti shakripana. Miserly person who takes this human life and chases after the endless mirages and then dies without understanding Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. That is considered the greatest loss for a human being. To not go back to Godhead at the end of life is a great loss. He's lost the opportunity the human life affords. It is very sad. This is what makes devotees really sad.
Devotees who have dedicated their lives to the service of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami herein describes how he has written in a way that will satisfy his spiritual master and the previous acharyas. He is not writing in a way simply so that everyone in the public will be happy with his writings. He did not write because he wanted to get a million-seller book on the best-selling list of the Times of India. There was no desire for prestige, therefore there was no compromise. As soon as you want to satisfy the mind and senses of the general masses, you must compromise. You must give them what they want. Just like in Hollywood. You have all heard of Hollywood? Of course, this is Bollywood. Bollywood is some sort of a reflection of Hollywood. I can't say perverted because it's probably less perverted than... It's probably a slightly more pious reflection. So, when they make a movie, they spend so much money and the idea is to appeal to the public. Therefore, there's certain principles that has to be within their movies. Even if it's a religious movie, there has to be some sort of love affair. There has to be some scene of passion. There has to be some violence and bloodshed. And they will take a regular story. One of my godbrothers, very wonderful artist, I spoke to his son recently. And have you heard of Disneyland? Disney Productions? He was one of the principal artists recently for the animations or the cartoons written for these full-length cartoon movies in Disney World, making a lot of money. And previous he hardly knew how to draw. But by his association with Srila Prabhupada, he started drawing beautiful pictures of Krishna and Radharani and Lord Chaitanya, Srimad Bhagavatam. But then in the Grihastha ashram, somehow or other, he required funds and everything else, so he got a job in Disney Productions and became one of the executive artists. But then he decided that I want to make a full-length, two-hour animation or cartoon of Ramayana to the standard of Disney Productions, because he can do it. And he talked to the Disney people. Sometimes the end of a story of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. The end of a chapter, it says, anyone who hears this narration will most certainly achieve pure, unalloyed devotional service to Krishna and will become one of the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya. So we read it, and then we read that, and we think, what happened? How is it? According to this, Shukadeva Goswami says, if I read this story, I will have no material desires. But what's in my mind? According to this, I'll have love of God. The benediction is true, but you have to hear it again and again and again. If a doctor gives you good medicine, he will say, take this medicine and you'll be cured. But it doesn't mean the first tablet you take, you'll get cured. You have to keep taking the tablets again and again and again, and gradually, if you do it properly, Shigadha Gopinath Kija, then you become cured. In reply to those critics who say that Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is full of Sanskrit verses, it can be said that Srimad Bhagavatam is also full of Sanskrit verses. I have already given a synopsis of all the facts and figures of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's last pastimes, and I have a desire to describe them elaborately. If I remain longer and am fortunate enough to receive the mercy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I shall try to describe them again more elaborately. I have now become too old and disturbed by invalidity. While I write, my hands tremble. I cannot remember anything, nor can I see or hear properly. Still, I write, and this is a great wonder. He is herein revealing how he is simply a helpless instrument, like a puppet in the hands of the previous acharyas. By all material standards, writing Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is utterly impossible for him. He was in his 90s when he began this work. And he's explaining his condition. He says he's too old and disturbed by invalidity. You know how old people are so distracted and disturbed by the pains of their bodies? His hands are trembling. In those days, there was no dictaphones. There was no computers with all sorts of word processors. However, if we place this Vaishnav mentality on the altar of our heart, worship that, strive for that, to be a humble servant of the servant of the servant, and Krishna will give us that. If we want something else, Maya will give us something else. So yes, we have so many necessities we have to deal with in this world of dualities. We may have our particular service, we may have family, we may have occupation, we may have health problems. We deal with these things, but we shouldn't take any of it too serious. What we should really take serious is developing these qualities. And of course, by being responsible in our activities and in our occupational relationships in this world, in a Krishna-conscious way, we can strive to do that. Srila Prabhupada would not tolerate someone being negligent of their duties. We must perform our duties with great awareness and care. However, what is the purpose and goal of our duties? This. Trinarapi sunichena tarorapi sahishina amani namanadena kirtaniya sadhana. The goal of our duties, the goal of our life, the goal of our sadhana is to come to a state where we honor our superiors and worship all Vaishnavas. Because then we can get the supreme mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the empowered to be an instrument of his munificence in this world. Srila Prabhupada was embodiment of this principle, and he has given us all the chance to also strive in our life for this great treasure. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. I'd like to, first of all, offer my grateful obeisances to all of you. Vanshakalpaturubhyascha krivasindubhyevacha patithanam pavanibhyo vaishnavebhyo namokama. And express how much I appreciate taking time from your very important duties in this world to come and
try to encourage your insignificant servant in this way. It is
Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his mood of Sri Radharani, when he was living his last 6 years in Sri Jagannath Puri, exhibited to the world the highest ecstatic realizations that no one can even achieve. We can strive, and ultimately by the mercy of Sri Radha Gopinath, we can experience a infinitesimal tiny little part and parcel of what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu experienced. But he was so much immersed in vipralamba, separation. And these ecstasies of separation have never been seen by man. It is even a very confidential secret within the Vedas. How he would go on the moonlit night of the Sarat season with his devotees, singing about Krishna, dancing with his devotees in Vrindavan, gopis, and he saw the ocean. And in separation from Krishna, he thought it was Jamuna and jumped in, fell unconscious all night long, was just floating underneath the ocean, sometimes on the surface of the ocean. Who could possibly perform such pastimes of ecstasy but the Supreme Lord Himself? So He taught us the principle of love and separation. And this is humility. If we cultivate our union with Krishna in a neophyte level, it's very dangerous. We can become very proud. In India, so many people, I have seen Krishna. Krishna came to my house today. Krishna talked to me today. Krishna ate my food today. So many people tell about how they have seen Krishna, how they know Krishna, how they talk to Krishna. But the six Goswamis, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are praying, I am so fallen, I am so insignificant, I am so sinful, Krishna has left me, where is Krishna? Please tell me how I can come back to the feet of my Lord. So the spirit of separation is a spirit of utter humility. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was in the house, actually he was going to Srivas Thakur's house one day, and some atheistic, materialistic people approached him and were actually criticizing him in their own way. When you become a devotee, especially a preacher, do not think that everyone will respect you and honor you as a great sadhu. Even the Lord Himself, when He becomes a preacher, He is criticized and harassed by materialistic people at times. So they came to Him and said, Oh, Vishwambar Pandit, we know what you're doing, you're chanting and dancing all night, but let me tell you this.
Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Gai Gaura Madhu Sware. Gai Gaura Madhu Sware. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Generally, trumpet players are in Maya. Usually this trumpet was designed for glorifying material sense enjoyment. However, Ekalavya Prabhu is showing what is Yukta Vairagya. The least likely thing to be used in Krishna's service. But by his playing of the trumpet, devotees dance in great bliss, chanting the holy names of Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So we will meet again at 12:30 for arti. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Savai Swayam Bhuva Samrat Riya Putra Swayam Bhuvaha Prati Labhya Priyam Patni Kim Chakara Tatho Mune Vidura said, O great sage, what did Swayambhuva, the dear son of Brahma, do after obtaining his loving wife? Charitam tasya raja rasher adirajasya sattamaha bruhi me shudhanaya vishvakshena shrayo hiso. O best of the virtuous, the original king of kings, Manu, was a great devotee. And the more we feel a debt to Srila Prabhupada, the more we will be dear to Krishna. The more we feel indebted to Srila Prabhupada, the more we will make spiritual advancement by getting the mercy of Krishna. That proportion should be very carefully understood. We should be grateful. And Krishna arranged Srila Prabhupada to show this most rare, incredible, supernatural form of total, total dedication in the spirit of compassion to glorify his devotee. He never gave up. We are so easy to give up if something doesn't go right. We have our service. I'm not getting the reciprocation I desire. Let me give up and do something else. It's not giving me happiness to do this anymore. Prabhupada never gave up. Why? Because if Prabhupada gave up, there would be no hope for the world. That's why. Prabhupada didn't consider, I'm doing anything. But he knew the hope for the world is Krishna. The teachings of the Gita. The mercy of the Yugavatar, Sri Gauranga Mahaprabhu, is the only real hope for the age of Kali. This quarrel and hypocrisy going on such massive levels throughout the world. This is the hope. Therefore, back to Godhead must go on. Even though it was such a small beginning, so small it would have discouraged anyone to give up. But Srila Prabhupada had faith. He told us the story of the sparrow who wanted to dry up the ocean with her little beak. What hope was there for a sparrow to dry up the ocean? What hope was there for a poverty-stricken person who had not even 25 paisa or proper clothes
walking through the crowded winter streets of Delhi just to get a little begging for paper. What is the hope of such a person starting an international society to spread love of God all over the world? About the same as the sparrow to dry up the ocean. The Prabhupada had that faith. As Garuda helped the sparrow, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, and my Guru Maharaj will help me. I just have to go on because the world needs this nectar of Harikatha. Srila Prabhupada ki. Thank you very much. We will end here. Hare Krishna.
Sarvanityu padharaya aham krishnasya jagataha prabhava pralayastatha.
Believers there are free to go everywhere within the creation of the Lord, and there is no limit to such creation, particularly in the region of the 3/4 magnitude. Since the nature of that region is unlimited, there is no history of such association, nor is there end of it. The conclusion may be drawn that because of the complete absence of the mundane qualities of ignorance and passion, there is no question of creation nor annihilation. And the duration of life between the creation and annihilation is in the material world, everything is created and everything is annihilated. And the duration of life between creation and annihilation is temporary. In the transcendental realm, there is no question of creation and no destruction. And thus, the duration of life is eternal unlimitedly. In other words, everything in the transcendental world is everlasting, full of knowledge and bliss without deterioration. Since there is no deterioration, there is no past, present, and future in the estimation of time. It is clearly stated in this verse that the influence of time is conspicuous by its absence. The whole material existence is manifested by actions and reactions of elements which make the influence of time prominent in the matter of past, present, and future. There are no such actions and reactions of cause and effects there. So the cycle of birth, growth, existence, transformations, deterioration, and annihilation, the 6 material changes, are not existent there. It is the unalloyed manifestation of the energy of the Lord, without illusion as experienced here in the material world. The whole Vaikuntha existence proclaims that everyone there is a follower of the Lord. The Lord is the chief leader there, without any competition for leadership, and the people in general are all followers of the Lord. It is confirmed in the Vedas, therefore, that the Lord is the chief leader, and all other living entities are subordinate to him, for only the Lord satisfies all the needs of all other living entities.
Srila Shukadev Goswami, in this chapter 9 of the second canto, is describing what had taken place at the very beginning of creation of this particular universe. Just last night, I was speaking with a very, very famous in the sense that he travels all over the world for many decades
giving lectures, and there's less covering of Rajaguna and Tamaguna in Satyayuga. Therefore, people could live 100,000 years. And practically everyone has all the 8 mystic cities. Because the soul is just less covered. In Kali Yuga, if a person lives to 100 years old, everyone is offering their obeisances. How great. That is, my guru is 110 years old. My grandfather lived to 105 years old. This is considered such a great thing to live old. The tree in my backyard is 2,000 years old, so who cares about all these other things? It is a fact. Longevity of life is not such a great thing. But in Vaikuntha, the soul is in its pure, completely uncontaminated state. Therefore, by material standards, it has incredible, inconceivable beauty and power and wealth and strength and fame. All opulences. But still, they are always qualitatively one in their perfect state, but quantitatively infinitesimal and utterly dependent on Krishna. That is our eternal constitutional position, even in the perfect state of consciousness. Does that answer your question?
And also that by the mercy of the Lord, he can be empowered to do much more than even his ability. Like it said, wherever Krishna descends in all the universes, Arjuna also comes with him. So, by the mercy of Krishna, Arjuna can expand himself into as many Krishna wants.
Yes, the soul that surrendered to Krishna in its pure spiritual consciousness is an instrument. Krishna can do anything. Even through his living entity. We find Arjuna can expand himself by Krishna's grace. Arjuna can do anything by Krishna's grace. But also Arjuna becomes completely helpless and useless with Krishna's grace. When Krishna withdrew his power, Arjuna's Gandiva bow did not function. His mighty strong arms as a kshatriya became incapable. He was easily defeated by just a band of ordinary highway robbers. Not even kshatriyas. How is that? Krishna showed. Arjuna was as unlimited as Krishna in the sense of shaktivesh. He was empowered by Krishna. But he was always depending on Krishna. So similarly, if we surrender to Krishna, we can do incredible, wonderful things. But if we become proud, Krishna can take it all away because it is all his. It is never ours. Your ability to preach, your ability to speak, your ability to cook, your ability to sing, your ability to do anything is all coming from Krishna's grace. If you become proud of these things and think you are the doer, you are the benefactor, you are the savior, I'm there with them reciprocating that. If I were to come back in a visible form, it could not increase their service or their love. It's already reached such a peak in separation. But actually, Krishna was visible. The gopis and the Brijabasis were seeing Krishna everywhere, in separation. They were remembering him in everything, in separation. And wherever they would remember him, wherever they would see him, Krishna was there, reciprocating in that form. Is there any other questions?
Rajo Vacha Yena Yena Vatarena Bhagavan Harir Ishwaraha Kuroti Karanasam Ramyani Mano Gyani Chana Prabhu. King Parikshit said, My Lord Shukadeva Goswami, all the various activities exhibited by the incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are certainly pleasing to the ear and to the mind. Simply by one's hearing of these activities, the dirty things in one's mind immediately vanish. Generally, we are reluctant to hear about the activities of the Lord, but Krishna's childhood activities are so attractive that they are automatically pleasing to the mind and ear. Thus, one's attachment for hearing about material things, which is the root cause of material existence, vanishes, and one gradually develops devotional service to the Supreme Lord, attachment for Him, and friendship with devotees who give us the contribution of Krishna consciousness. If you think it fit, kindly speak about those activities of the Lord. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. As stated in Prema Vivarta, Krishna Bahir Mukahaiva Bhogaban Shakari Nikatasta Mayatari Japatiyadhari. Our material existence is Maya, or illusion, in which we desire different varieties of material enjoyment and therefore change to different varieties of bodies. Brahmayan sarvabhutani yantra rudani mayaya asan api kleshira asadeha. As long as we have these temporary bodies, they give us many varieties of tribulation. Withdraw our senses and our mind from this world. But this world is so powerful. Arjuna explained to Krishna that it seems that to control the mind and senses is more difficult than to control the wind. And Krishna said, yes, it is. Daivi heshu gunamayi mama maya duratyaya mame vamye prabhajyante mayam eta tarantite. But one who surrenders to me, that person only, by my grace, can be delivered from the three modes of material nature, which are very, very, very impossible to overcome. So of all paths of religion, the path of bhakti is the most sublime. It is the easiest because it is the means by which the power and the glory of God Himself comes to our rescue. So first we must understand who we are and what is the goal of life. That is called sambandha. And then we must understand how to practice the process by which we can achieve the goal of life. That is called abhideha. And that is what Krishna is speaking of here in Bhagavad Gita. How to perform sacrifice. And the greatest sacrifice is that which is satisfying to Krishna. Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nitya Das. The original consciousness of every living being is Krishna consciousness. Krishna consciousness means to understand that we are the eternal servants of Krishna. We are meant for the satisfaction of Krishna. Yad karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhoshi dadasi yad yad tapasyasi konti yad tad kurushumad arapanam. All that you do, all that you eat, all that you offer and give away, whatever charity or austerities you may perform, Krishna says, should be done as an offering to me. And any other work you do that is not done as an offering to Krishna will only further incriminate you in the laws of karma and in the bondages of the sufferings of this world. It is a very popular misconception that Bhagavad Gita teaches that work is worship. That if you simply do your work honestly, then that is the teachings of Gita. That will liberate you from the cycle of birth and death. But Krishna very, very specifically and emphatically declares in this verse that any work that is not done in devotion to God is the cause of bondage. It is not worship. It is simply greed, illusion. It is a product of ignorance. To work in harmony with our real nature means to perform bhakti. And bhakti is possible and practical within our daily life only when we are working under the direction of the Lord's representatives. Krishna explains in Gita, Tadvadi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnana jnaninastana. By the teachings of Gita and ultimately achieve prayojana jnana, the goal of life, which is to understand the eternal love for Krishna, which is dormant within us. Prema pumartha mahan. The ultimate goal is to love Krishna. And this is the ultimate goal of every great religion, to love Krishna. And the nature of love is to surrender to the beloved, not out of force, but out of one's own free will. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was once approached by three persons from the village of Shikanda. One was named Mukunda, one was named Raghunandan, and the other was Narahari. And they asked him for instruction, how they could best serve him. Because through service we achieve the goal of life. And this service is the greatest sacrifice. Lord Chaitanya told Mukunda, you are a householder. You have a wife, you have children. And you are a doctor. He was actually a physician, such an expert in his profession that even the king would take diagnosis and medication from him. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told him, it is your duty to gain material and spiritual wealth and to use it all in the service of the Lord. And then he turned to Raghunandan and he said, it is your duty to always serve the deity of the Lord in the temple. And he told Narahari that you should stay here with me and preach the message of the Lord throughout the world. These three basic occupations comprise the perfection of human society. One is the householder who has family, who may have a home, an occupation, to perform their occupation in such a pious, devotional, and exemplary way. This is one of the greatest needs in society today. This is what Krishna told Arjuna to do. Arjuna was a householder. And he was a warrior. Krishna told him, there is no need to give up your family. There is no need to give up your profession. But you perform all of your activities in a spirit of devotion. Duryodhana was also a grihastha and a military person. But what was the difference between Duryodhana and Arjuna? One worked for his own personal interest, Duryodhana, and Arjuna worked for God's interest in a spirit of devotion and surrender to the Lord.
Tremendous social unrest. America was the most powerful and influential country in the world, and it was having severe internal problems. It was the time of civil rights, where minority groups like the black African people, who had for many, many generations been kept as slaves by the white Europeans who had come to America to settle there. You know the story, of course. At that time, America, especially in the southern states, was basically agricultural. And to do all the work, the hard, tedious work, wealthy people would go to Africa, and they would bring the African black people and put them on huge boats, overcrowded, terrible condition. They would bring them to America as their own property, and they would literally sell them. If a person had a strong body, it would be a high price. If a person didn't have a very strong body, it would be a lesser price. Women would be sold, men would be sold, and the people had no independence. They couldn't go anywhere. Until they were sold, they were just kept like in a prison, in a camp where they were not allowed to leave. They would just eat what they were fed. And then they were sold, and if you were bought by a nice person, you would have a relatively nice life. But most people were very cruel, because these were slaves. Literally, no rights. The country gave slaves no rights. Their only right was they had to obey the master. Even if a person left their master, you could be arrested by the government, because you weren't allowed to be in the country unless you are serving your master. So this was a very difficult era that lasted, I believe, for a couple hundred years. That these slaves, they would be forced to work throughout the day. Oftentimes they were beaten and whipped by their masters, punished if they didn't do enough work. They were told who to marry, who to have children with. They had no freedom whatsoever. So this was a very terrible situation. And this happened up until actually the Civil War, which took place, I believe, in the 1860s. The main purpose of the Civil War was to abolish slavery. Because the southern states, they wanted to continue this slavery. That these black people, they are my property, I can do anything I want to them. I can beat them, I can torture them, I can anything. I can work them as much as I want, they have no rights whatsoever.
Makes us so dull that we don't mind wasting moments of life. In fact, we like to do it. It's enjoyable. Give me a break from all this hearing and chanting. Let me do something else for a change. Let me go to a cinema. Let me just lose myself in the television for a while. Let me discuss all these social matters of the historical progressive faults
of everyone else. These things we think give relief, but we are so dull. We do not see what's really happening is Maya in the form of Kali is viciously entered into our minds and senses to rip away the most precious thing you have, that moment to think of Krishna. That's what's actually happening. But we're so dull, we're thinking, oh, this is very nice, this is very nice. But what's happening behind the scenes is Kali himself is just stealing your life away. With his sharpened sword, he's just cutting away your heart's connection to Krishna. That's what's actually happening. Someone told me there's a certain type of rat. They blow when they bite. Have you ever heard of that? They blow. They go, shh, 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 shh. So you don't feel that they're biting. Actually, it feels good. They're blowing, and it feels so nice, like, ah. You don't even take the time to look to see if anything's happening. And meanwhile, they're biting you, eating your flesh, and injecting rabies into your bloodstream. And you're thinking, I have a nice sensation. You don't even know the rat's there. That's how Kali works. She's dulling you to give you a nice sensation. Oh, this feels good, it sounds good, it looks good, tastes good, smells good. And that is just like a decoy to just take your attention away from what's really happening. But this ugly rat is biting you, eating your life away, and injecting you with poison. Hare Krishna. If we were able to just be aware, attentive to reality, that's what we would see. But instead we think, oh, how nice. Look at how everyone is enjoying. Let me try it also. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he explained to Sri Sanatana Goswami how precious every moment is. It is a fact that when we are living in Grihastha ashram or Brahmachari Sannyasi ashram, we have oftentimes many duties that we have to perform. Occupational duties sometimes does not provide the facility where we're in the association of people just singing the glories of Vishnu. In fact, if we had to do this all day, we would probably fall asleep. Many of you are already falling asleep. I haven't even reached 1 hour yet. The responsibilities of life should be performed in a pious and honorable way. However, we should know how very, very essential it is that when our occupational duties are finished, we sanctify our consciousness, we deepen the quality of our Krishna's devotion by being in an atmosphere where hearing and chanting and serving the devotees and the Lord is prominent. When we come home, the home should be a temple of God. A place where there's prasad, a place where there's a wonderful altar, a place where the family is interested in serving Vaishnavas and chanting the holy names, in doing seva, in giving in charity, Krishna conscious name. But in order to keep the house sanctified like that, we also need sadhus to come, and we have to go to where the sadhus are. We have to develop a society that supports and keeps Krishna in the center. If we live like that, we're not wasting a moment. Then even our work is meant to facilitate that. It's not a waste of time. Providing we do not unnecessarily go beyond the call of duty in the material modes of nature. Life is precious. Life is a series of moments. This is what Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized in the example of Maharaj Parikshit. Because by doing this, we could all achieve the ultimate goal of life. We need each other. We should recognize that fact. We should honor one another in that way. But if we indulge in the type of gossip that disturbs faith in Vaishnavas, then what hope do we have? We require that confidence. If anyone complains and criticizes, right or wrong, what is the use of listening to all these things? Whatever we need to know, we do to protect ourselves. But other than that, wherever there's a sincere devotee that's hearing and chanting, wherever there's someone who's just giving the right thing, we run! We don't need to know everything about everybody. We want to go be wherever Krishna is manifesting himself. Hare Krishna. Is there any questions?
Krishna Maharaj, you spoke in the lecture about how Maya is actually attacking us, and we realize that in Krishna, when we are in Krishna consciousness, somehow it is very difficult, it's very difficult to stay in the process and be very steadfast and continuously, because Maya is attacking us all the time. And it's almost like the inertia, the direction, the natural direction is towards Maya, and it's so difficult, you are fighting against the current. Why is it like this? Why is it that Krishna makes it so difficult? He puts Maya, and Maya is attacking us all the time, though we are trying to become sincere. Why does Krishna do this?
Krishna is the perfect well-wisher of all living beings. We have created conditionings which have created certain desires and aversions. We have created a whole environment of karma, of actions and reactions in our whole life. Krishna's been telling us all along, just chant and be happy. But for so many lifetimes, we have gone astray. And we've created such a predicament in our life. And when the reactions of our actions, or when the symptoms of our conditionings manifest, then we ask, why is Krishna doing this to me? We've done it to ourselves. However, when you become a devotee, Krishna allows certain reactions to come under his own control. Because of the depth of your conditioning, you actually have to go through that to really come to the proper state of consciousness where you can appreciate the mercy of Krishna. And you will come to that state if you make the right choice. I don't think there's a more classic example than Maharaj Parikshit. A slight mistake, and he was cursed to die in 7 days. That is a major obstacle. It's a major obstacle apparently in his service also. Because he was the king only as a devotional service to Krishna. If you're the king, and that's your service, you're doing it all for Krishna for no other purpose than that, and you're cursed to die in 7 days, is that an impediment to your service? Externally, major impediment. Maharaj Parikshit wanted to show that whatever deserving, not deserving, whatever obstacles come, if we just take it as an opportunity to surrender to Krishna, our life is perfect. In the case of Parikshit, he didn't deserve it. We do deserve it and more. And we're thinking, why is Krishna doing? However, Krishna's letting it go on because it's what you and me need. It may not be what we want, but if Krishna just gave us what we want every day, we would probably remain in this material world forever. What we need is usually not what we want. Or let us say, oftentimes, we want to come, we want nice kirtan, we want nice prasad, we get it. But we also need it. The happy, blissful moments in Krishna consciousness, we desperately need that. And we should be very grateful when it comes. When all the devotees are dancing blissfully, embracing one another, we need to go through that, and Krishna's giving it to us. But the times will come when very, very painful reversals appear in our life. May be inflicted by another person, it may be inflicted by our own body and mind, it may be inflicted by the natural environment. But we need that too. It's custom tailored just for your spiritual progress, the entire universe. When a person comes to Krishna consciousness, the entire universal creation is custom arranged just for you to get purified. Krishna has that power. Does that answer your question? So in whatever situation, we have to know, where is our shelter? In the association of devotees. In hearing the glories of the Lord. And in ultimately taking shelter of His most munificent incarnation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who has given us the most accessible connection to the complete mercy of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. The Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Please. there another question?
Many devotees ask this question that in spite of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and chanting holy name, still I am feeling attracted towards cricket. Why is this and how to overcome?
In the land of India, this is one of the deepest, most stubborn anartha to overcome. If you ask me, why is it? I will have to say, it's completely inconceivable why anyone would be attached to this crazy thing where everyone's just hitting balls with sticks and running around like... I mean, for a person who doesn't know what it is, they just look like crazy children just running around, hitting balls, wasting their lives. But that's actually what's happening. If you know what's going on, you're completely an illusion. If you don't know what's going on, you could see what it really is. But why is it? Because people want excitement. They want to feel a sense of pride in belonging to something. They want victory. It's our nature. When the cowherd boys would see Krishna killing a demon, they would feel incredible pride that this is our friend, this is our loved one. He's doing something so wonderful. He's victorious. There's so much excitement in watching this. It's invigorating. In this world, people are basically bored. They want to find that somewhere. So, in these sporting games, do you want to know the truth? Not only cricket, but football, baseball, basketball, hockey, soccer. It's hardly even a sport. These people get paid so much money. They're just businessmen, and that's their business. When children do it, it's a sport. But when these big, big professionals, they're getting so much. And if they win, they'll get so much. Even if they're not getting paid directly, the benefits that they'll get, so much. In America, there are athletes that get $8 million a year for bouncing a ball and throwing it in a circle. How many dollars is how many rupees is $8 million? Huh? Twenty-three point six crores. 33.6 crores. And that's not including all the commercials and advertisements and every time their faces on some bill hoarding. There's a person in America who gets, I think, $6 million a year just for hitting a ball with a stick. That's probably about 28 crores or whatever of rupees. And if they don't get paid, they won't play. And yet all the kids are watching, oh, my hero. That hero doesn't give any concern about you. He's only concerned about his money. And he likes you watching because that means more money, that means more fame, that means more reputation. I don't know if that's the same for cricket in India. Maybe. I don't really know. But anyways, the real principle is that people want a sense of belonging. They want a sense of pride in someone that's winning for them. When Krishna kills the demons, everyone is feeling great pride. I'm on Krishna's side. I'm part of Krishna's family. So we see all these sporting events, it's all local pride. In America, they don't have national things. They have city. And everyone in the city, Chicago playing Detroit, Los Angeles playing New York, Atlanta playing against Utah. And everyone in the city, tens and thousands of people, hundreds and thousands of people, they go mad after one city defeating another because it's my city. You very rarely ever see anyone from one city who wants the other city to win. And if you do, your life is in danger. So it's all this conception. Saeva Gokara. That we're identifying ourselves, that I belong to this particular land. I don't, New Zealand is playing against someone, I don't know. But the people of New Zealand, you think they're feeling, oh, if Pakistan wins or if India wins, that will be very nice. Somehow or other, they're identifying these players. I belong to them. They're part of me. If they are victorious, I am victorious. In India, when the Indian cricket team wins, why only the Indians are happy? No one else in the world is happy. No one except in India rejoices when the India wins. Did you know that? I hate to enlighten you in this unpalatable truth. But it's a fact. Nobody in Russia cares if India wins, except the Indians. And if Brazil wins the soccer game, the only people that have any care or happiness is the Brazilians. Because we're identifying so strongly with this particular body and the designations that relate to this particular body of nationalism. And we want the sense of pride. We want the sense of victory. We want the sense of excitement. On the bodily concept of life, it goes very, very deep. It's not only India, it's everywhere in the world. People are mad, addicted to sporting events. When their team loses, if they're a losing team, people don't really care that much. But when they're a winning team, and they're winning, 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 they're right up there, and then they lose. It's... practically worse than death. After all these years, our expectations were almost fulfilled, and then that one person, you practically want to kill the other team. And that's what they sometimes do. They personally try to injure the person. And the people, the spectators, when the key person of the opposite team is injured, everyone says, oh, that's too bad. But in their hearts, they're thinking, very nice, very nice. More chance to be victorious. So if we're identifying ourselves with the eternal soul, then when we read the stories about Krishna, how he stuck his hand in Keshi's mouth and expanded it, and Keshi's eyes popped out of their sockets, and he went and he rolled over. He was defeated. Soundly defeated. And there was going to be no rematch on that one. devotees, when they hear that, they understand we're part of Krishna. He's the relative of our soul. He's from our country, Goloka Vrindavan. Does that answer your question? So basically, people are like that because they just don't have a taste for the spiritual needs of their soul. When you have a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna, then these things are not very important. Please believe me, I'm not against cricket. It just doesn't matter to me. But sometimes I leave the country for a while because of fear that if I stay here too long, I might start thinking that, oh, they lost. Because the association's so strong. Haribo. Is there any other question? Yes.
Yeah. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, Maya's work is to give more miseries and serve Krishna. I mean miseries to us. But when we preach or talk about Krishna to someone, some other person, why doesn't Maya get aside for a little time and allow us to preach about Krishna? Why does not Maya get aside for a while and allow us to talk about Krishna and allow him to accept about Krishna? Because in one way it wants to serve the Lord, and in the other way it's coming in the middle.
While we're on the subject of cricket, I don't know how to play, but if you want to score, why does the opposite team try to stop you?
Guru Maharaj, they want to win and they want you to lose.
Thank you. Spoken with realization. Same principle. Maya is on the opposing side. In this material world, you're the visiting team, she's the home team. In this world, you're playing in her stadium. In this world, all the fans in the grandstands and in the audience, they're all cheering for her. So we have to keep our team strong. It takes a lot of teamwork and united efforts. And we can know that when we try to preach, we're trying to defeat Maya in her own home stadium. And the more you try to preach, the more she's going to try to stop you. You're asking, why does Krishna let her? That is your question. Why does Krishna let her do? Because that is the necessity that we all require to actually take shelter of Krishna. If there was no competition, would an athlete really try to perfect his or her skills? The more there's competition, the more you know you have to perfect yourself. And the stiffer the competition, the more intensely we know in order to win, we have to be really, really prepared. These athletes, they work out like anything. They practice like anything for hours and hours and hours and hours and years. And competition actually brings that necessity. So similarly, when we know that to preach that Maya is going to counteract everything we try to do or say, she's not going to stand aside, then we have to really prepare. We have to go deeply into the scriptures. We have to go deeply into getting proper guidance and training by other devotees. We have to go deeply into our prayer, deeply into the holy name. And the deeper we go, the closer we get to Krishna. So Maya is actually assisting Krishna in helping us to perfect our lives. That answer your question? Is there any other questions? So we will now have kirtan. Was there another question? No? Okay. Kirtan is our practice. And it's also the fulfillment of our life. To glorify Krishna is to praise the victorious mercy of the Lord over all opposition. When we say Jai Shri Krishna, what does that mean? That means all victory to Krishna. That means Krishna always wins. Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All victory to the congregational chanting of the holy names, the most popular sport of the spiritual world. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki.